Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm going to pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Now, welcome back. Second half of the Tom Abraham Show here on a Football Friday in the doghouse. What a beautiful day as well. It's going to be a great night for high school football. Can you believe we only got 2 weeks in the regular season left in Tennessee, 3 weeks of the regular season left in Alabama? I mean, this is ridiculous how fast it goes by. I mean, it's nuts. We're talking about the final month in college football. We're coming up on a halfway point pretty soon in the NFL. Just goes so fast, goes too fast. At least I get to talk to Brent Sobolewski, our NFL insider, joining us, and he does such a tremendous job with the Bleacher Report. Folks, missed him last week, but he's back this week. Sobo, welcome in. How are you?
Doing well, Tom. I got to admit, though, I almost didn't answer my phone. It's nothing you did. Don't worry. I just changed my ringtone today to the Magnum PI theme, and I didn't recognize it when my phone went off.
Now, why would you go Magnum PI?
Because Tom Selleck's the man. That's all there is to it.
Let me tell you something. Best show on TV, Blue Bloods. I am a huge Blue Bloods fan. I think it's the best show going on TV right now. My wife and I watch it every Saturday morning because we're always out Friday night. And then Saturday morning, we wake up and we watch Blue Bloods before we get up out of bed on the DVR. I love that show.
I watched it faithfully since the start. And ironically, even though I mentioned Magnum P.I., what got me into Tom Selleck as an actor and really enjoying his work. I don't know how many people actually watched the TNT versions of the Jesse Stone novelizations where he played the main character. But yeah. For me, I enjoyed that quite a bit. And ever since, I've just been a big fanboy.
Yeah. I want to go back and watch it. You know what I've been watching lately? I get them confused sometimes because they're very, very similar. But one is SEALs and one is Rangers. Navy SEALs and the Brave. A lot of military stuff coming out. You know what I mean? I think it's part of the political climate. A lot of military stuff coming out. But those are they're actually both really, really good shows. They kind of I think are very good depictions of what it's like for those guys.
The Brave. I don't watch either. The Brave, is that the one with David Boreanaz?
No, he's in Navy. He's Navy SEALs. Yeah, he's Navy SEAL. Oh. And
Navy SEALs.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Navy SEALs in that one, and that you know, they do a good job with it. It's good stuff. They need the Navy SEALs to go into Cleveland and just clean house there. Yeah, just get everything.
Transition.
Anybody who ever shook hands with Jimmy Haslam needs to be dragged out of there, kicking and screaming, and they'd probably run out of there. They'd probably leave voluntarily if they could, but there's got to be another house cleaning coming soon there. I mean, they got to keep doing it until they get it right. I hate to say it. I'm one for consistency, but they're consistently bad. I mean, it's uncanny.
It's amazing. In a league completely full of parity, the one constant is the Cleveland Browns lose. And we've seen just last night when it came to the Kansas City Chiefs, I would have argued and did that they were the best team in football even after their loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
Whoops. Kind of slipped up against the Raiders, and even though it was an untimed down, and we can we can go and quibble over the officiating last night. It just goes to show how little dominance there is in the NFL today. And we look at Cleveland week in and week out, they're terrible. And the reason they're terrible is a top-down approach that was set up to fail from day one from Jimmy Haslam. He has what I call a boardroom approach to running his franchise. Instead of having a clear set hierarchy, there is four heads of departments, as it were, that report directly to the owner. It'd be the head coach, the chief strategy officer, who is Paul DePodesta, better known as from Moneyball. Then you have the business side of things, and Sashi Brown is the executive vice president of player personnel. When you don't have that accountability, that's when you start getting the backstabbing. That's when there start to be room for those heads of state or those heads of those departments to really start picking sides and trying to get their narrative out there as to why they're failing. And from that point down, everything's going wrong for Cleveland.
Yeah, and I'm not buying Hugh Jackson, what he's selling on the Deshaun Jackson story or the Deshaun Watson story. I believe Deshaun Watson, he thought he was getting picked by the Browns, and I don't even think Hugh Jackson knew what was going on behind the scenes when they pulled the trigger on that. They could have had Myles Garrett, who has looked good in his first couple of appearances, Myles Garrett and Deshaun Watson, and how much better off would they be? And they'd still have the other 52,000 picks they had for the most part.
But that never would have been the case, Tom. And then this is why, first of all, Cleveland wasn't targeting Deshaun Watson. That was obvious when they traded out. But they were targeting Patrick Mahomes. And it was one of the primary reasons why the Kansas City Chiefs traded up to select him. And furthermore, Jackson himself has contradicted what he stated about that pick. When it was come out publicly through Silver, who is a very close friend of his, who works for NFL Network, stated the pick would have been Malik Hooker from the Ohio State, the ball hawking safety. So now you have him saying that he would get ready. To get ready for what? That doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. It depends on how you want it to be viewed. It can mean doesn't mean that he was their favorite target at that point. Doesn't mean that Hugh Jackson wasn't okay with them moving out of that pick and trading down. So it really means nothing in the grand scheme of things other than the fact that you passed on a quarterback for whatever reason when you've done so twice in 2 years and you're still awful at the position.
You alluded to the officiating last night. It was horrific. I mean, I will say that. I mean, it was horrific. I thought it was kind of comical at the end the way it went. You said untimed down. There were like three untimed downs. but I want to start with this. I think much like what we see in baseball, when we see a guy's, you know, cleat come off for a split second on a play at second base or a play at first, and the guy's tagging the guy and the glove stays on him and they call him out when they go and look at that replay. Jared Cook, that's a touchdown. That's one motion. That's the body landing. If you got to stop the action with the cheek on the ground and you could do that on every single play. To me, that was a touchdown. It looked like a touchdown. It smelled like a touchdown. That was a touchdown. It should have been a touchdown right from there. But then after that, I mean, the defensive holding was questionable. The offensive interference was questionable. It was just ridiculous. And it started early in that game. There were some terrible calls. And I don't know what the answer is going to be. More full-time officials. I don't know what it's going to be to get it right. But it makes it really kind of shady when you watch a game and you see some of that kind of stuff happening out there.
Ironically, I felt that the non-call on the first Amari Cooper touchdown was the best call of the day. Because while, yes, his hands were on him and it looked like he pushed off, to me it was clear that Mitchell tripped over Amari's feet and fell down, then it was wide open for the touchdown. Now, I know not everyone agrees with that assessment, but to me, that's what I saw. You know, when you look at this, you're coming into this contest already having issues at a national level on your calling from officials. Start with the Austin Seferian Jenkins non-touchdown that occurred during Sunday against the Jets versus the Patriots. I don't, Tom, at this point, I'm going to be honest.
I don't even know what that is. I still don't know what happened on that play. I still can't figure out what the hell they're calling there. I mean, I know the rules, but
fumble.
Yeah, right.
So to me, it puts me in the same boat as what is an NFL catch. If anyone can actually tell me what that is, I'll be stunned because I have absolutely no clue. And when it comes down to it, they've tried to legislate it to such an nth degree that it's taken out some of the human factors that comes through to it. Because to me, for example, we know when a catch is a catch. We know when a touchdown is a touchdown, at least for the most part. There's very few instances where you think to yourself, okay, you know what? They need to reverse that. Because it comes down to it, when you have to go through this quote-unquote process, securing the ball, mm-hmm. making a football move, holding it all the way through the reception, it's just – it makes it so formulaic, and yet it's still backfiring. That's what I don't understand. And I one of the points you alluded to, Tom, that I believe is needed, yes, they hired 21 full-time officials. The entire crews need to be full-time, period. And I know that the NFL officiating union is against that because some of these guys have very good careers outside of the NFL.
And go get another job. Another job. If you want to still be an attorney – and you want to be an official, then be an attorney. But you can't, you know what? I'm a radio talk show host. I would love to coach. You know, I've been asked several times to coach. I can't do both, okay? I can't go back to coaching and do this job here. If I want to coach, I got to go coach. I got to give this up. I want to do one or the other. You know, it's the same thing. If you want to be an official, it's a well-paying job. They're paying these guys now $220, $230. If Ed Hockley still wants to be an attorney, then go be an attorney. To me, it's a no-brainer. And there's a lot of off-season work for those guys. They can be at camp. They can be getting in shape. They can be doing, the younger guys can do indoor football. There's a lot of things that they can do just like players. They can have the same kind of schedule as the players. You would never have a mini camp without officials there officiating every drill, every everything, because it would make their eyes sharper and it would make the play better. Then the players would know what the hell interference was. Because that same thing, that was not offensive. The first touchdown by Crabtree in the untimed down, same thing. The DB was going down. He was falling. And yes, there was a little bit of contact, so it looked kind of like Crabtree might have pushed him down. He didn't push the guy down. The guy fell. And they called the interference there. So full-time everybody.
Well, the other thing I'd point out is, while they should be full-time, and I agree 100%, this is also a byproduct of what we've seen within the NFLPA, the latest collective bargaining agreement, because of so many limitations placed on practice procedures, physicality during practice. It's a sloppier brand of football, and there's no other way to explain it. So when it comes down to it, not only are the players playing at a lower level overall, at least not playing consistently at a high level, then you add to it the mistakes made by the officials, and then it just becomes a maelstrom of suck as it comes down to what you get, the inconsistency in the calls week in and week out.
Yeah, Brent Sobolewski with us, Bleacher Report. I think everybody felt the same about the Raiders. If they lose that football game, their season's over. They win that football game, I still think their season's probably pretty much shot. I'm looking at as many as five more losses. They got Patriots, they got Broncos, they got to go to Kansas City still. They got the Cowboys, they got the Eagles in Philadelphia. They can be a 7-9 team right now. And I know nobody wanted to talk about what it's like to be a lame duck team, because all the support in Oakland and yada, yada, yada. But I think there has been a big distraction there. And this team that was this, you know, very much a trendy pick in the AFC, I got a feeling is not going to, not only is not a playoff team, I don't think they're going to have a winning record.
It's going to be difficult because the defense obviously is not up to snuff. And second of all, you need to have consistency offensively, and they don't in certain stretches. Last night they looked very good at points. But coming into that contest, offensive coordinator Todd Downing was basically the scapegoat of all their ills through the first 6 weeks. A few changes were made that can make them more competitive long term. First of all, you saw Derek Carr under center a little bit more using play action. It opened up some of the passing game, some of the ability to hit those quick outs when defenses are expecting them to forego deep strike because of the vertical passing game they've had in the past 2 years. Second of all, you saw more of Jalen Richard. Even before Marshawn Lynch kind of went crazy and got himself kicked out of the game, he was getting more reps out on the field because he's their best running back at the moment. And finally, with Amari Cooper he was utilized a little bit differently, not just as a pure outside receiver. They started lining up him up in the slot. If you look at the 45-yard touchdown, he was lost by the defensive backs because he came out of the slot and they weren't prepared to cover him as such. So if these types of adjustments are going to help them moving forward, at least to be competitive, to try to get back to where they believe they would be, although it's going to be hard to live up to what we believe to be a Super Bowl standard.
I would agree. Marshawn Lynch, I'll be honest with you, I don't think that he's their best back. I mean, I like the way, you know, some of the guys looked yesterday. One kid, 33, his name just jumped out of my head. He looked pretty good for them. But regardless of whether he is or he isn't, 266 yards on the season so far, a couple of touchdowns. What he did last night, first of all, I hope the league suspends him at least a game. Because, I mean, he got he didn't touch an official. He grabbed an official and got very up in that official's face. Secondly, I don't know who the hell he was out there to protect. Was he out there protecting his cousin? What was that? Was that about he saw the Raider lineman getting all around up on Marcus Peters, who was his cousin? Was he going out there for his sake or for Derek Carr's sake? And third, if I were the Raiders and I'm a 500 team, I'd cut his ass. I don't need that aggravation. If I were them, I would cut him. That's how much I think that was despicable what we saw last night.
Honestly, I don't know exactly what his thoughts were. It's not like Marshawn's going to pontificate on his reasonings for whatever he decides to do. But there was an interesting quote by Marcus Peters afterward that said, "Family comes before teammates." And look, man, it's still a game. I don't know what you expect to happen. It's a late shot. What do you expect the offensive linemen, how for them to respond? And what? Furthermore, it's not like it's going to turn into some huge bloodbath on the field. It's football. Guys are going to get fired up. They're going to try to take it out on you in some degree. So it's not going to get anything beyond that point. So I honestly, the whole situation is just strange to me. And I don't know exactly what happened or why it happened the way it did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess after at first, it looked like he was running out there, because of the cheap shot that Carr took. Which, was being taken care of by the lineman, but then it's like the linemen are all around his cousin, and now, now we don't know what's going on when we saw that thing develop. The Titans are the ones that go to Cleveland. They shouldn't have any problem with the Browns, but they're probably going to go without DeMarco Murray. Now, we saw what, just how devastating Derrick Henry can be late in a game this past week where he ended up going for 140-some-odd yards. In that game, we're liable to see for the first time this week, they might just go with him hard against that rush defense of Cleveland. And I'm thinking he might get 25, 26 carries this week. Liable to see a 200-yard rushing effort out of that kid. And it's DeMarco Murray. It's going to take a little bit of time, I think, for that hamstring to get right.
This is a really interesting matchup from that perspective, Tom, when you look at it as potentially Derrick Henry taking over as the lead back. And Cleveland doesn't do things many things. They do not well overall. But one thing they have improved dramatically this year, and they're one of the top in the league, is actually stopping the run and making plays in the backfield. And when you have that combined with Marcus Mariota's inability to move around the pocket, it could limit Tennessee's offense. Now, I don't expect Tennessee to walk away and lose against the Browns, but it's just a strength on strength. Even against an 0-16, this is a front four that has consistently gotten the backfield and made plays, and it's only getting better as Myles Garrett gets healthier and healthier. Now, he's not quite 100%, but they put him close to 95% healthy now. Maybe you start seeing even more explosion from him. How they handle Cleveland's front four will determine this entire contest.
Yeah, well, if they don't get the quarterback, that's the problem, because the defensive backfield has really struggled. I mean, I think that's where, where the problem is that if they can get to him, great. If they don't get to him, it's usually out the door. They give up a lot of big plays, and you can't even find the safeties, And I, like I said before, I've seen that before in Nashville when Greg Williams was here, and you can't even find the safeties in the you got to get to all 22 to find them, because they play 25 yards off the ball.
Come on, Tom, you're old enough. It's weird hearing all 22 come out of your mouth. That's coach's tape, man. Coach's tape, man.
The all 22. That's where you find those guys. That's the only time you can find them is on the coach's tape. Speaking of coach's tape, I know you're watching the college football and you're breaking down and always working towards the draft. It's something that you're a draft Nick. You really enjoy that part of the deal. halfway through the college football season, where are you on these quarterbacks? Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and Allen Kidd out of Wyoming that everybody seems to love, even though he doesn't do anything. And Barkley, if it's the Giants, if the Giants end up in those top three picks or so, you know, right now it's the Browns and San Francisco, but the Giants are right in the mix. They're going to be they might be picking in the top three or four picks. Could you see them taking a quarterback to start grooming somebody to replace Eli? But they have that horrific running game. Would the Giants take a Saquon Barkley if they were picking somewhere in the top two or three picks?
Well, let me start to preface this by stating I believe Barkley is the best collegiate player in the nation. He's the number one overall talent, in my opinion. And while we would never actually expect a running back to go number one overall in today's NFL climate, that's how talented he is, and he would be an amazing fit for the New York Giants. With that said, if you're picking one or two and you like one of these quarterbacks enough, you have to plan for the future because you may never be in that position again to select them. Now, I will say this. When it comes to these quarterbacks, I'm still going through the evaluation, obviously, and I was sitting down just yesterday going through a couple games trying to figure out exactly how I feel about Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. But this is what I'll say, Tom, because this may be surprising to some. Deshaun, I learned a lesson with Deshaun Watson. One of the things when you have an opportunity to cover the NFL draft, you should self-evaluate and where some of your weaknesses based on how you missed players before. And I thought Deshaun Watson was a late first-round, early second-round talent. Now, he ended up going 12th overall. But where I get hung up at times is overblowing the weaknesses I see within their game instead of accentuating what they do well. And even though, yes, there was concerns within Watson's game, we saw how talented and how special he was for multiple years at the collegiate level, at the highest level, winning even a national championship against Alabama. I would argue that Baker Mayfield is being viewed in the same way by myself and by others. He's not 6'2", so we're going to downgrade him. He's not the guy that's running a pro-style offense consistently, so let's downgrade him. But you know what he does consistently? Throw accurate passes with good arm strength on a consistent basis, completing over 70% of his passes. He is that guy that we all thought Johnny Manziel should have been. And he's better working within the structure of an offense. So if there's one guy right now that I'm intrigued by, it's Baker Mayfield.
Can we trust him coming out of the Big 12, though?
See, I don't buy into that. I never have because when it comes to personnel evaluation, it's all about the individual. Because remember a few years ago, no one trusted anyone coming out of Oregon system. But lo and behold, here's Marcus Mariota, and no one says that anymore.
Do we hate Brett Hundley as the quarterback, not personally, but as the quarterback of the Packers enough to say that, you know, even though they're tied for the lead, that deal is over, this is all going to be about Minnesota and the Lions? Or could Hundley do something to keep that team in the mix?
I think they can keep them in the mix, and that is more a testament to the other two teams, indictment of the other two teams than it is a testament to the Packers, simply because Hundley is talented. We knew that. Remember, he was a highly rated draft prospect himself that fell down boards because he was needed developed. Well, now he's sitting on the bench for 3 years behind Aaron Rodgers before he gets his chance. He's athletic. He's a guy that has the natural tools. Has he progressed mentally? Has he really absorbed everything that they want him to do with Packers? I don't know, have the answer to that. But we know there's a lot of weapons within that offense. That wide receiver, once Ty Montgomery gets healthy, the offensive line is starting to get healthy as well. Both offensive tackles practice this week, so they could be back in the lineup. If the defense holds up, you still have an opportunity, especially with Detroit, who are the comeback cat. It seems like they're always putting themselves in a position on that razor-thin edge of victory to win or lose each and every week. And with Minnesota, you're thinking to yourself, can Case Keenum actually lead you to promised land, or are you eventually going to get Sam Bradford healthy and back in the lineup? And you don't have that answer yet. And so, to me, that's why those two teams are just as questionable as the Green Bay Packers.
It was an amazing line swing for that Saints game. They were a 6-point favorite with Aaron Rodgers. They're a 6-point dog now with Hundley, a 12-point swing in that game. And for the life of me, you know, those next two games at home are going to tell us a lot about Green Bay because they get the Saints and then they get the Lions on Monday night after the bye week. And it's amazing to me that somehow, some way, the NFL can't figure out how to give everybody a bye week before their Thursday game. yet the Packers got a bye week and then play a Monday game. They get a bye week and a Monday game. You can't get a bye week and a Thursday game, but yet you get a bye week and then you don't play till the following Monday. Crazy.
Well, despite everything I just said, I'm not crazy, and I'm starting the New Orleans Saints defense. Yes, the Saints defense on my fantasy team. So
wow.
Maybe that speaks a little bit towards how I ultimately feel about Huntley and the Packers moving forward.
Wow, I'm going with the Rams defense because they gave me 20 points last week, so I'm going to stick with them and see if they can score some points this week. All right, man, appreciate you. You're making me feel like, you see, I just put Marcus Mariota back in over Carson Palmer against the Rams. And now I'm feeling like I got to go back to Carson Palmer. And I had Alex Smith on my roster too and left him on the bench last night. He had 35 points. And now you start talking about that Browns rush and immobility of Mariota. And now I'm thinking maybe I better go back to Palmer. I don't know.
You got me confused. Well, first of all, you should have started Alex Smith. He's legitimately a top three quarterback in the NFL this season.
Yeah.
And second of all, it all depends on those hamstrings. You know, Tom, when it comes to hamstrings, they can wreck a season.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I haven't had hamstrings since I was 21 years old, so I'm not sure. Like our Donovan used to say, we never pulled any muscles back in the day. We didn't have muscles, so we didn't have to worry about it. All right, man.
Well, that was my favorite sports quote of all time was John Kruk when he pulled an abdominal muscle and he stated, well, at least I know I have some.
Yeah, at least I know I got them. There you go. All right, well, appreciate you. Sorry that my Yankees took out your Indians. But I'm not really. And hopefully they'll finish off the Astros.
You had to go there before you kicked me off here, didn't you?
I had to go there. Well, listen, it's a zero-sum world for those of us. If you're a Browns fan, at least I got the Yankees. I got the Tide. I'm a Browns and Knicks fan, but I also got the Yankees and the Tide, you know, and somewhere in the middle of the Boston Bruins. So, you know, you gotta have some successes in life. Can I tell you?
I'm just a loser from Ohio, but thank you for having me, Tom, as always.
Well, that's why I'm glad I'm not from a big city. You know, like I was able to pick my teams as a kid instead of having to be a fan of every team in my city. So that was a good thing. That's what's good about being from the country. All right, man. Appreciate you as always, and we'll do it next week.
Have a good one. Enjoy your weekend, man.
Thanks, man. You too. Brent Sobolewski. Me having a good weekend pretty much depends on what's going to happen tonight in Houston or tomorrow night in Houston. I'm really not concerned about what's going to happen in Tuscaloosa. Don't care what happens in Cleveland. Pretty much about what's going to go on with that little round ball over the next two nights, if necessary. All right, when we come back, speaking of Tuscaloosa, Clint Lamb is up next from Saturday Down South. We'll talk Tide and Vols right after this. At 730-1039, the home. Clint Lamb covers Tide for Saturday Down South, does a tremendous job with that, and 100 times now these two teams have played Alabama and Tennessee, and they'll get that thing going on Saturday afternoon, 2:30. I will be there for CBS Sports Radio. I'm fired up about that, and Clint joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Clint, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing today, Tom?
I'm fantastic. There's been this narrative that this isn't even really a rivalry anymore because of this streak. This has always been a very streaky rivalry. You know, going the entire 100 years, especially the last 50 years, there'd be runs of 6, 7, 8 years in a row. It's at 10 right now. But you're a pretty young guy. From your perspective, because I'm old enough to remember it going back and forth. I remember Phil dominating this thing for several years before Nick Saban showed up. I remember Bear Bryant dominating it on the Alabama side. But you're a pretty young guy. I'm guessing you were like, you know, in middle school the last time Tennessee won one of these games. Does it feel still like a rivalry to you?
It does. And I will say, you know, when you go 10 years without beating an opponent, that is going to take away at least a little bit of the excitement surrounding the rivalry. But, you know, I can remember when I was younger, I lived in Sevierville, Tennessee from, I think, 98 or 99 until about 2001. And that was during their 7-year streak against Alabama, and that was pretty tough being an Alabama fan up in Tennessee territory. So for me personally, it still is a huge rivalry. I'm definitely looking forward to the game, but I can see where it has lost a little bit of its luster the last couple of years, as long as Alabama continues to really, in most cases, dominate Tennessee from the start to finish of every game they've played over the last 10 years.
Yeah, Florida has dominated Tennessee as well for a good many years now, and I remember at one point in time where Urban Meyer was asked about the rivalry, and he just kind of glibly made the comment, "Is it really a rivalry? I mean, doesn't both sides have to win once in a while for it to be a rivalry?" But I think that part of this where it is a border battle and so on, it that will never go away, and it just doesn't seem to be it has been something that has been so streaky over the years. Now, Mac Wilson. Now, Mac Wilson put a picture of him lighting up on an Instagram with the cigars. We lighten up this weekend. We know how Nick Saban feels about all of this talk and chatter.
It's like taking poison.
Rat poison.
Like rat poison.
Rat poison is what it is. So we know how he feels about the whole thing. But Mac Wilson was getting lit up by Nick Saban on Saturday, this past Saturday against Arkansas, when he got into a little shoving match deal, got a penalty on a kickoff or kickoff return, and he made it all about him. Is there a problem with him? Is he a little bit rogue? What's the deal with Mac Wilson in terms of falling in line and not doing? It doesn't seem to be going along, falling in line, if you will, with the process here, where he's doing stuff like that, posting pictures of smoking cigars ahead of the game and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I just think he's a young guy and he's excited. He's finally able to contribute. He played a little bit last year as a true freshman, but he's really become one of Alabama's better defensive players, despite seeing limited snaps. But I will say, there's no doubt, I'm sure he's already heard from Nick Saban regarding that incident.
Yeah.
That's something that you definitely don't want to do as a player. But he's finally getting to enjoy the rivalry and be a part of it. Sense of he's going to get to be able to see some snaps on Saturday. He's going to be able to actually make a difference in the game. And I just think he got a little bit too excited. But, not every young guy is going to fall in line as quickly as others. But I will say that I think that he is a good kid. And I think he's just overwhelmed with the ability to actually be able to play in such a big rivalry game.
By the way, in your story, you have it as 4,016 days. We did a T-shirt this week, a game day T-shirt. We put 4,018 days as of Saturday on there. Are we wrong or are you wrong? I mean, is it 4,016 or 4,018? Maybe our guys were off a little bit on the math. I thought we were hitting 4,018 on Saturday.
Well, I think that when I wrote the article, which was last night, I finished it up and I put 4,016. It should have been, when it's been released, it should have been 4,017. So that does put it on track to be 4,018 tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, that's a long time. And, when you really think about 10 years and how far we've come, whether it be as a society, football, just the differences between where it's at today, where it was at 10 years ago, it's just been a very long time. And it's still kind of surreal when you think about it being 4,016, 17, or 18. That's a really long time.
It is a long time, and that's why I say, when you think about things like that when you think about from a Tennessee standpoint how frustrated their fans are, in as much as it's been 20 years now, closing in next year, it'll be 20 years since the last national championship. It's been, I don't know how many years since the SEC, going to the SEC championship game. What was it, 05, 06, somewhere in there, 07, maybe 06, something like that, going there, not winning it, but going to it. And I think there's a whole generation now of kids, recruits and otherwise, that don't recognize Tennessee for what they are. The fact that they have the 13 SEC titles, the second most in the SEC, and they don't even think about it. I mean, kids that are – my son's 18, right? So if you're a senior in high school, a senior football player in high school, you were 8 years old the last time Tennessee won one of these games. I mean, it is a surreal, I think, is a good word for it.
Yes, sir. And, I mean, I can understand Tennessee fans' frustrations. I remember, like I said, back when I was younger, I was a kid. I didn't fully understand what all went into the rivalry. I just knew that I loved football, and it was never fun on Saturdays to watch your team lose to a big rival like Tennessee. And so I definitely understand, as I've gotten older, why it would be a frustrating thing for it to be, you know, we hit double digits as far as years since you've been able to beat a program like Alabama's. But I do think some pieces in place for the long term. I don't think Butch Jones is the answer. I love him as a guy off the field, but as far as him leading a program like Tennessee's, I just don't think it's been the right fit ever since he's got there. I think he's kind of been overwhelmed, and I do think we ultimately end up seeing a change sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. You know, at this point, they're just waiting for the right time to pull that trigger. Clint Lamb with us from Saturday Down South. John Kelly is their best player. Very scrappy guy. I really like watching him run. He runs with a vengeance. He runs angry. But he's going up against a great run defense. How does Tennessee manage to get points or move the ball if John Kelly is to be negated?
Really, they don't. And I'm just speaking honestly. Garantano is going to be an excellent quarterback for Tennessee down the road, but he's just not ready yet, especially going, you know, to Tuscaloosa against that Alabama defense. Offensively, Tennessee just doesn't really do a whole lot. They don't score points. They don't put up, you know, rushing yards, passing yards. It's been very frustrating to watch them as an offensive unit this season, regardless of who's been starting at quarterback. As far as Alabama goes, they're, you know, I think first in the SEC, if I'm not mistaken, as far as preventing third down conversions from the offense, and Tennessee is, I want to say 13th or 14th. I don't remember if they're quite at the bottom, but I think they're near the bottom as far as their ability to convert offensively on third downs. And it's just the matchup's just, it's just not there for Tennessee. And I think that's why everybody can confidently say that outside of some fluky, you know, once in a lifetime type of football game, I just don't see Alabama losing this in any form or fashion.
Well, and it's not even about winning and losing anymore. It's about executing, playing well, not being sloppy, taking care of the football like they have all season long, those types of things, especially going into a bye week and then with, you know, and then with LSU down the road, because they don't want to have that kind of a situation. If you're an Alabama player, the last thing you do is the last thing you want is to not have a clean performance in this game, because it'll be a miserable bye week, because this is all, you know, Nick Saban's at this point now where he's just inventing stuff to get upset about. From a game plan standpoint, if you're Alabama, you've got one of the top rushing offenses, over 300 yards a game in the country. You're going against one of the worst rush defenses in the country, 242 yards a game. However, by numbers, Tennessee's pass defense is pretty good because nobody really passes on them. But Alabama hasn't been tested in that pass game. Do you think at some point in time, you know, they start working on that? I mean, they're going to run the ball, build a lead, but do they try and do something in this pass game to try and get it up to speed? Because you would think at some point in time, they're going to need Jalen Hurts to lead a drive where he might have to chuck it around a little bit. I mean, its schedule is a little bit back-ended here.
Well, I think they certainly tried over the last couple of SEC games. I looked back at the, you know, what I thought was going to happen when Alabama played Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that with Ole Miss's small defensive line, Alabama was going to be able to run the ball at will, and they were going to do a lot of running, and they did. But they also, I remember I was at that game, and they, from the first snap, they were slinging the ball around a little bit, letting Jalen throw it around more than they have. And I think we also saw a little bit of that versus Arkansas as well. Versus Tennessee with that terrible run defense, you already know going into the game, it's not having to establish the run. The run's already been established before you even step on the field. I know that's crazy to think about it that way, but, you know, Alabama has a chance to really improve a weakness of their offense against a team like Tennessee who does have a solid pass defense. Now, I will say they're not going to force anything. I think there's going to be certain situations where DeBall is going to take what the defense gives him, but you know you're going to be able to run. Alabama will run, whether it be with, you know, Damon Harris, Bo Scarborough. I've loved what I've seen from Josh Jacobs. I ultimately, you know, wrote in one of my articles released a couple of days ago that I do ultimately think he ends up being Alabama's number two back in the second half of this season, just because of his ability to make people miss in the open field. It's a great complimentary piece for a guy like Damian Harris. And, you know, with I think he had a 33-yard gain through the air, a 46-yard run, another 18-yard plays. He's producing big plays for Alabama's offense, and as long as he continues that, I see him continuing to get more reps. But he is
an excellent
option, providing a safety blanket for a guy like Jalen Hurts. And with his ability to do that, I think he is going to get utilized a lot more. We should see Alabama throw it around a little bit against Tennessee for sure.
I don't know about Josh Jacobs as number two guy. I mean, he's a Swiss Army knife kind of guy. He's got a lot of different skills that he brings to the table. There's no question about it. By the way, I like them better in 25 than I do in 8. It just doesn't look right in 8. But I think that they've been playing this, that they've been doing this kind of with a Bo Scarborough tie behind their back. I think they're getting ready to unleash that guy in the late in the season and into the playoffs and all the way to the national championship game, if that's where they get. I think you're going to see another late rush out of him. They've kept him fresh. He's going to be healthy. And, you know, I just think that's kind of like the mindset. Almost how you use him in the second half of a game, they're getting ready to use him in the second half of a season. So I think all three of them are going to get a lot of love.
I completely agree. I don't want to take anything away from Scarborough and what he's been able to do. He's been able to grind out the tough yardage and situations for Alabama, and I think he continues to do that. If it's the second half of a game and Alabama's trying to shorten that game, I absolutely think Scarborough and Harris are your two guys. I just think with Jacob's ability to provide big plays, whether it be as a runner or in the passing game, and kind of be a safety net for a guy like Jalen Hurts and get his confidence up being able to swing out to him. Right now, Scarborough is the second leading receiver on the team. As far as receptions goes, and he just hasn't been able to do a lot with it. That's not the kind of back he is. He's able to, just like a guy like Derrick Henry is able to, but Jacobs, his ability to turn a swing pass or something that is a short route into a long gain is something that I really think is going to help Alabama's offense in the second half of the season, and that's the only reason I think his workload continues to increase over the course of the second half of the season. But yeah, there's no doubt that all three players are going to see significant snaps.
Clint, I appreciate you as always. Clint Lamb has been our guest from Saturday Down South, talking a little Tide. They're hard to talk about sometimes now. I mean, it's just I guess we start talking about recruiting, the fact that there's only 11 commits right now. There's not a five-star on the list yet. So, you know, and the early signing day is coming. I'm sure that's going to all straighten out as well. But it's hard to talk about them week in and week out when they're 30 or 35-point favorite. It seems like every week it's nuts. But it is what it is. All right, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you. Yeah, Scarborough just 359 yards so far in the season, but he's averaging 5 yards a carry. I mean, he's only had 72 carries. Damian Harris has only had 68 carries. He's got 630 yards. He's averaging 9.2 yards a carry. Stupid. Yeah, split in two. All right, let's get a break. Come back with an update next right here at 730-1039. The Ump. All right, let's get an update with T-Mac before he skips out of the studio to go do that Randolph football game with DAR. It's a doghouse sports report. Easy for me to say, huh?
Yeah, that doghouse sports report, huh?
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm going to start it off with the Dodgers as they clinched their first World Series berth since they won it all back in 1988 by dismantling the defending champs, the Chicago Cubs, 11-1. The Yankees and the Astros play tonight in Game 6 of the ALCS to determine who will represent the American League in the World Series against the Dodgers. The Yankees can clinch tonight as they lead the series 3-2 after trailing, for the second time this postseason. You can check that out on FS1 tonight at 7:08 Central if you aren't listening to R. Keisha and myself on the Randolph Raiders. You're right here on the Ump. And Leonard Fournette, DeMarco Murray, and Delanie Walker are among the notables that are questionable for this Sunday in the NFL action. Stephon Diggs for the Ravens will be out. And on the NBA side, Draymond Green, his knee injury, and Andre Iguodala with his back injury will both play tonight against the Pelicans. I'm Tony Mack. That is your Doghouse Sports Report.
Grumpy disagrees with my assertion that Marshawn Lynch, if I just cut him. Nah, I would just cut him.
Grumpy disagrees. There's a hot take.
Yeah. Well, he disagrees with me all the time. he said, he goes, not only does he disagree, he totally disagrees. Not even a little bit. He just totally disagrees. Totally disagree with you on Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch and everyone else should have come off the bench when the quarterback was hit like that. Sometimes, Tom, violence is the only answer. But no one's going to die in a football fight, and a fight was called for. But look, first of all, that hit was not that bad. I mean, it was a hit. It was a late hit on a quarterback that was going down. But we see that all the time in football. Secondly, Carr's entire offensive line was out there. What's Marshawn Lynch going
to
do?
He wasn't even out there trying to protect his quarterback. That's the thing. I get that he's related to the other guy, but, I mean,
that's
come on,
next
it's your quarterback.
Thing. Yeah, that's the next thing. We don't even know who Marshawn Lynch was out there on behalf of. We think he might have been out there on behalf of the guy that hit his quarterback, who's his cousin. Because, you know, blood's thicker than water.
Insert the T.O. clip. It's my quarterback, man.
It's my quarterback. Well, no, it's my cousin. My cousin, man. All right, have a great call on the game tonight. All right, tell Arky I give him a big thumbs up. Go Randolph.
Go Raiders.
Go Raiders! Because the autumn wind is... In the meantime, me and Cream will take it through to the end of the show. Phone calls at the top of the hour will reset the Friday Trifecta next on 730-1039.